Welcome to the DMD edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, special correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. I'm in Denver today with Dr. Julie Parsons, a pediatric neurologist at Children's Hospital Colorado. Dr. Parsons has been associated with this hospital since 1976, when she started as a physician's assistant. She's also a professor of clinical pediatrics and neurology and is co-director of the Muscular Dystrophy Association's Neuromuscular Clinic. As such, Dr. Parsons is particularly interested in Duchenne, spinal muscular atrophy, Friedreich's ataxia, and several other rare neuromuscular diseases. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm sure a lot has changed in the 47 years since you started working here. So let's start by asking, what are you most interested these days in terms of rare diseases, clinical trials, and the promise of gene therapy?
So definitely I'm most interested right now in the potential launch of a gene transfer product for dystrophinopathy, for Duchenne dystrophy, that may be commercially approved in a few months. This is an agent that is produced by Sarepta Therapeutics, and we're pretty excited about the potential for the launch of that drug if it's approved.
Now, this would be the first ever gene therapy for Duchenne, correct?
That's correct. We have exon skipping medications that also work on the genes, but this would be the first transfer of a mini dystrophin product for the treatment of Duchenne.
And the exon skipping only covers a small percentage of all boys with Duchenne.
That's correct. It has to be more specifically tailored to the genetic composition makeup of each of the boys. And this one should be more broadly distributed. There will be a few genetic profiles that this drug will not be able to be used for, but in general will be able to be more broadly applied.
Now, what's interesting to me, at least, having covered this for years, is that so many companies have been involved in trying to develop a gene therapy specifically for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Sarepta, Pfizer, PTC, the list goes on. Why is this one, does this one appear to be able to make it across the finish line?
Oh, that's such a good question. But I think that there may be other products that will make it across the finish line as well. Maybe this is just the first one. So I think that all of these drugs and products really take a tremendous amount of work in terms of the clinical trials, looking at safety as well as efficacy. And I think that there will be others. I think this, just as with our treatments for SMA, I think that there will be more products that come along in the future.
So in talking about rare diseases in general, you mentioned SMA. And of course, Spinraza, nusinersen, was developed and approved by the FDA in December of 2016. Prior to that, there had been no treatment really for SMA. What is the significance of this potential for Duchenne, in your opinion?
So this, I think it has amazing potential, and I think that it will be a little bit different than the therapies that we have for SMA. SMA is really a monogenic disorder. And Duchenne and the dystrophinopathies are more complex disorders in terms of a much larger gene and some more challenges in terms of being able to encapsulate and deliver. We can't deliver the full gene as we can with SMA. So I think it will be different, but I think that we have the potential certainly to prolong the lives of men and boys with Duchenne and to certainly improve the quality of life for these guys.
If given early enough, do you think there's a possibility that it could actually prevent the disease from ever developing, as is the case with Zolgensma, as far as we know?
So I'm not necessarily optimistic about that. When we are treating SMA patients, we are treating motor neurons and delivering the gene, a product from the health of motor neurons, which don't divide. And so when we're treating the dystrophinopathies, we're not able to treat a single cell non-dividing line like that. So I don't know that the results will be quite as dramatic at this point with The gene product 1.0, but maybe 5.0, maybe there's the potential for improvement at that point.
Getting back to SMA and your experience, you were talking earlier about how hospitals need to prepare for this avalanche of patients that are expected to come through your door once the FDA issues its final approval. Yes. Can you walk us through that?
Yes, and that is a huge challenge. So I would draw on the experience that we had from preparing for treatment of spinal muscular atrophy. And what we did at Colorado that I think has worked very well for us is there were two things that we did. So one is that we created a complex drugs team, and that particular team consists of an operations coordinator who manages and handles all of the administrative aspects of authorization, insurance approval, and scheduling. And then we have two nurses as well, who are the one call for any kind of issues having to do with medical issues, problems, concerns, writing orders, seeing the patients as they come in to be treated, and actually helping with the hospital delivery of these agents. So that's worked really well for the patients as well as for us in the program. When we look at a new drug to be vetted into the complex drugs program, it has to meet certain criteria. So for us, it has to be high cost, high risk, and it has to be delivered to a population of complex patients. So for instance, the boys with dystrophy certainly would meet those criteria. Once we have vetted a drug into the program, then we assign a knowledge leader. So for instance, for the dystrophinopathy drug, that will be Dr. Susan Apkon, who is a physiatrist, who's the PI on the clinical trial. And she will then go forward with our team to be able to develop the lab orders, what the process is going to be for delivery, the location for delivery, what we need to do in terms of letter of medical necessity to get commercial authorization, meeting with Colorado Medicaid. We are in a huge catchment area of patients that we see, 7-state Rocky Mountain region, so we actually have to meet with numerous different authorities to be able to get approval to have kids treated here.
And just for the record, you mentioned those 7 states are, besides Colorado, Montana, Wyoming, Kansas, Nebraska, New Mexico, and South Dakota.
Yep, little bits of pieces. We have patients from all of those states. Although, again, some states will take care of kids if they're born in the eastern portion of the state, for instance, for Nebraska and Kansas.
And you mentioned exactly like somebody from Montana might drive 12 hours in a blizzard, as you said.
That's right.
Just to have their kid looked at.
That's right.
And we'll obviously need to see more than one specialist to make that trip worthwhile.
That's right. That's right. And so our multidisciplinary clinic started in 1989 for that very reason, is that we cover a huge geographic area and patients really can't be driving back and forth and taking time off of work for several days to come in for an appointment. So our neuromuscular clinic started in 89 and we have numerous subspecialists. So we have physical therapy, occupational therapy, rehab, pulmonary, genetics, social work, nutrition, genetics, neurology. We have a lot of different subspecialists that see those patients and meet their particular needs. And of course, all of this was funded as an MDA clinic, which has been fantastic for us.
And in the case of SMA, how many patients do you currently have receiving Spinraza? And I understand they have to come every 3 months for a spinal tap.
Right, right. After the load, they come quarterly for life. So right now we have, I think, 38 who are being treated, both young children, babies, as well as going into actually young adults. And we've had about 17 or 18 that we've treated with Zolgensma. Colorado does all of the newborn screening for Wyoming as well. So all patients, all SMA patients who are identified from the state of Wyoming and Colorado, all of those patients come to Children's Colorado. We see those kids within 24 hours of being identified on newborn screen, and our goal is to have all of them treated by 21 days of age. The patients may choose and families may choose to be treated with gene transfer therapy with Zolgensma, they may choose Spinraza, or they may choose Risdiplam, which is the most recently approved agent. But all of our kids, we try to get treated as emergencies for SMA. It'll be a little bit different with the dystrophinopathies, where it's not as urgent an emergency to treat those patients, although we certainly want to treat as many patients as we can, as quickly as we can, but it's not the emergency of losing motor neuron cells and developing significant weakness within days to hours of being born.
And also with the case of Duchenne, there is no newborn screening nationwide for Duchenne.
Not yet. We're working on that, and we certainly, I've been on a panel that's been a pilot study trial out of North Carolina, and have been working on that for about the last couple of years, looking at a pilot trial. So I think it's something that will come when we have therapies that are helpful for the guys with Duchenne.
Now, a big question for you. How many boys do you think you will be expecting to see once this Sarepta therapy gets FDA approval?
So if it gets approved, then I think that we will be hopefully one of the specified sites for treatment. And so I would anticipate that from our patients alone, we may have 20 or 25 that it really depends on the label that the FDA approves for what age and what the genetics are for specifically for the patients. But I think we may have 20 or 25 from Colorado, Wyoming, but then we would hopefully be a referral center for other states who are not able to deliver the drug. And I will mention that I think one of the most important things about being a center to be able to treat patients is not just treating patients, but dealing with the safety issues that may occur. So I mentioned for the complex drugs team that we look at high-risk drugs. And so what are some of the risks that we think about from gene transfer therapy? What have we learned from SMA that we can now apply to DMD? Again, the MDA has been amazing in terms of having gene therapy summits. They had one last year. I just got back from the one that we had this year, last month. And that's an amazing experience to be able to bring together basic scientists with clinicians to look at lessons learned for treatments with gene transfer therapy and what do we need to do to keep patients safe. So we know that there are issues regarding liver and liver injury and liver failure. We know that there are issues around the heart and myocarditis. We know that the immune system is up excited, I should say, when we give this agent, and that there are some immune issues that come up that can cause significant problems. We've had two deaths from SMA, patients who were treated with Zolgensma internationally in the last 6 months, and that is very sobering. So we need to look at that and say, how can we keep our kids safe when they're treated? So to that end, I said I was proud of two things at Children's that we've done. One is having the CDP. The other is that I formed a gene team. And on our gene team, we have a hepatologist, immunologist, cardiologist, neurologist, pulmonologist, infectious disease, nephrologist, and all of these subspecialists, metabolics, genetics, all of these subspecialists, we've met every month for the last two and a half years, and we share from all of these subspecialties, not just neuromuscular, what gene therapies are we doing at Children's, what trials are we involved in, what drugs are going to come forward, and what do we need to think about in terms of side effects that might happen, and how do we prepare medically to deal with these kids when they get sick, because they get sick fast. I had the indistinct honor of being the neurologist whose first kid treated with Zolgensma went into liver failure. And so that involved all of these specialists as well as the transplant team. And fortunately, this patient was treated aggressively, did very well, and now is 4 years old and is just fine. But that was a pretty significant issue in terms of putting this team together.
We're almost out of time, but I can't end this without asking about the money question. This is an incredibly expensive drug. All gene therapies are. It'll be in the millions. How much, we don't know, but it's safe to say it'll be in the millions. And I want to ask you about that. How does a hospital like that deal with something that is so incredibly expensive? Obviously, patients can't afford this. Somebody has to pay for it, insurance companies, the manufacturer. How do you deal with the financial aspect?
So that is a loaded question. It's huge. And I think that hospitals have dealt with this in different ways. Children's has been absolutely amazing in terms of really trying to be creative and doing advocacy both with the state government, with Medicaid. Our mission at Children's is to treat the kids. So we will treat them. But it really, these expensive therapies that are most effective delivered early to children, it really affects the pediatric hospitals in the country or pediatric departments in the country in terms of taking that financial risk to be able to treat kids and improve the quality of their lives over time. So we've been creative about doing it. I don't think anybody's making money off of these. I think they're, you know, in certain situations, losing some funding. But we have to work on this really at a national level, and MDA has advocacy that has been very positive. I've gone to the state, to our state senators. I've gone to our national senators. I think this is something we're going to have to deal with as a national issue to try to figure out how to pay for it.
Dr. Parsons, thank you very much for talking with us. We appreciate your time. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.